Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Here we go.
Everybody is just on the beat screaming, kill, kill, kill. This is hockey.
Oh, my Lord. Wow.
This is the Puck Podcast.
I was very entertained and excited. I couldn't believe how good it was.
Shut your yap.
This is the Puck Podcast.
There's a point where it just becomes absurd.
That was gutless. Gutless.
This is the Puck Podcast.
Hi, I'm Wayne Gretzky, and you're listening to the real great one.
This is the Puck Podcast with Eddie Garcia and Doug Stolhan.
Okay, guys, show us what you got.
From Los Angeles, I'm Eddie Garcia, along with Doug Stolhan. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Puck Podcast. It is Wednesday, January the 24th, 2024. On this week's show in the first period, we discuss the past week on and off the ice in the NHL, including Patrick Waugh and Corey Perry back in the league. Plus, we have a developing story involving the 2018 Canadian World Junior team. Second period, we'll have a very special guest that you won't believe. And in the third period, we'll read your emails. All that and more coming up on this edition of the Puck Podcast. Before we get into all that, time for our quick off-ice report. A couple of minutes about what's been going on with us in our lives over the past week. And I bring in my co-host, Doug Stolhan. Hello, Doug.
CO, Eddie.
Okay.
That's Cherokee for hello.
CO?
CO.
CO.
Yep.
Okay.
Letter C and yo. That's how it's pronounced. It's actually much more complicated to spell it out, but regardless, CO Eddie.
Oh, and CO to you too.
Thank you, sir. I don't know how much you have for the off-ice report. I don't have a lot, but I did want to ask if you wanted to get into Facebook Gate, which we did not mention last week on the show.
Sure, we could do that. So I got a message on Facebook that we had something about our account was going to be suspended because I had used some sort of
copyrighted
photo, which I do or did. When I post, you know, today's episode is up, blah blah blah, and then I'll usually throw up a photo of, like, for example, maybe I'd throw up a photo of Patrick Waugh for this week, something that's related to the past week's news, one of the big stories, something like that,
right?
And I've been doing it since we've had a Facebook page, so I don't think it's a big deal, you know, but it seemed plausible that Facebook could be upset by that, I guess, that it violated their terms of service in some way. So I stopped posting the photos, or they took down. Actually, one of our posts got taken down, now that I think about it. They followed up with an email or a message from Facebook saying that our account was going to be deleted. And then for some reason, they wanted a picture of my ID to file some sort of an appeal or something.
Well, yeah, it was the your account's going to be deleted unless you file an appeal through this link. So we click on that link, we start the appeal process, and on the second step, it was like, all right, send us a copy of your driver's license. To which you responded, fornicate off.
And yeah,
and that's where this ends then.
And I'll be honest, I still didn't, scam didn't come into my mind. I just thought, I'm not doing that. That's ridiculous. That's just, are you serious? I'm not doing that. And then clicked a little bit later, like, wait a minute, this is ridiculous. And then we had posted, you know, hey, the Facebook page might go away and here's another page we're going to create. And then somebody said, hey, it's a scam. And then we kind of realized at the same time, yes, this is bull feces. So,
yeah. I mean, look, they're more and more two
sophisticated.
Things are true. More and more sophisticated scams, and we're getting older. So we are now in the market to be fall prey to these things. So
I guess so.
But yeah, they are getting more and more, and because they know how to, you know, it's the triggers that you always look for, right? Urgency, that you have to do something immediately within 24 hours. You can't think about it. The dire consequences, your page is going to be deleted. We've had this page for many years. And the lack of specifics. They didn't say, hey, Puck Podcast, your post on this date, It was just, it was more generic. So there were certainly warning signs, but at the same time, it creates a panic because you don't want to lose a page you've had for many years if you can avoid it. So they know what they're doing. I'm sure they've scammed hundreds, if not thousands of people. And I hope everybody involved in perpetuating this scam has been sexually assaulted by a syphilitic kangaroo.
Okay. That's a bit much.
It is not. You think about the people that create these scams, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to take advantage of people, and we're going to steal their identity. We're going to steal their bank accounts. We're going to steal their page, whatever it is. It's completely malicious and reprehensible. So I have no place in this world for those people, in my opinion.
Well said, I guess.
It goes back to the Dennis Miller. I don't care for their previous actions, and I don't care to see what they come up with next.
Yeah. So Casa de Garcia is in disarray. We already had the remodeling of the kitchen because of the flood.
Yep. You had the flood. So it all started with a refrigerator repair done incorrectly.
Right.
That caused a leak, which caused a flood,
right,
which caused the kitchen remodel. Then you found a mouse in the washing machine. And
yes.
You were nice enough to rescue it and send it free.
Yeah.
All it did was tell its friends, hey, there's a lot of good food in there. Just make sure you don't go in that one machine.
Possibly. But so we've had traps put all over the house. We've had to clear out our closets. And so all the stuff from our kitchen is in our dining room and living room. It's also a closet, a big closet downstairs. So all the stuff is out of in there. And now we've got all the stuff from our closets. Like, for example, our walk-in closet and our bathroom, all the contents on the ground, at least the things that were still hung up or hung up and whatnot. But anything that was on the ground is now either in our bathtub and in our shower. It is a mess in this house. It looks awful, and looks like some, you know, hoarder's house or something, I would guess, just stuff everywhere. So like the only places that we have to go in our two-story house are an area in the kitchen to cook with limited counter space, so that's great for my wife, and then the office where I record the show, and then the loft area where we watch TV, and then the bedroom, and everything else has got stuff like stacked everywhere. So I'm hoping by the time Lord Stanley's cup is passed out, that our house can be back to what it's supposed to be. But yeah, it's a mess right now.
Yeah. That's not a fun thing to experience on a daily basis.
No. And I saw a few of the mouse traps that were effective.
Yeah.
It's
never pleasant.
No.
Do you have the old snap traps?
Well, it's funny you say that, because my wife initially said no to that, you know, thinking that was, I don't know, too violent of an end. But then, you know, she didn't see it, thankfully for her, because I know she would be more upset than I was. And I was actually upset by it. But seeing, you know, the mice, you know, And then realizing how they die with this thing is like, that's awful.
What do you got? The glue trap?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the worst. That's inhumane.
So that was what we had. And because it's cheap, I guess that they want to do those, right? And so right. my wife, they came and they removed the traps that were effective. And then my wife asked, will you put down the Snap ones? Because she yeah. said, yeah. And
Quicken. So it's the equivalent of telling them about the rabbits, you know?
Yeah.
It's quick and easy. They don't even realize it's going to happen and it's done. As yeah. opposed to the glue trap, they know they're trapped.
Yeah.
And yeah, so, awful.
Yep. So,
I mean, you basically, the glue trap is you're turning it into your garage into the setting of Saw for,
yeah, for not life. Just the garage, in the house too. So, and then there was, well, I won't get into it, but.
Well, the house, how do you keep your little demons from getting into that?
That's another chore that we have to do. It's basically, they're sequestered in a small area as well.
Okay, and
closet doors and bathroom doors have to stay closed at all times. Basically we run them downstairs outside and then right back up again. There's no letting them wander around and sniff around and whatnot. And usually they're pretty good about that. So
yeah,
just get some kibble in your hand and suddenly they'll follow you around anywhere you want to go. So anyway, that's that.
I mean, that's true of you as well. You get some candy in your hands. If Karen had a Reese's Pieces or a Reese's peanut butter cup, you'd follow her wherever.
That's true.
Where are you going? Yeah. Come on. Throw it into the back seat of the car to get you to go to the dentist or something.
I'm going to the dentist tomorrow, actually, but nothing big, just a cleaning. All right, let us get
into
that.
You say that, but it's never that easy.
I love our dentist, man. It's a little Asian woman, and she is just boom. She's no nonsense. She's like, everything okay? Yes. Or if you say yes, then she's like, boom, gets in there and you're out of there in 20 minutes. She's just like a NASCAR pit crew. I mean, she's just boom. I'm there. No messing around. And anyway,
I don't, speaking of the NASCAR pit crew, I would pay extra money if they had that kind of a service somewhere. If that was what Jiffy Lube was, I pull in there, they gas me up, they change the oil, they check the pressure on the tires. I'm in there for less than 2 minutes and I'm out the door.
Wouldn't you pay
extra to pull in there? And
just, it depends on how much, you know, it depends on how much it was. I mean, just for the show, I might do it, but
right. $100 gets you a full tank of gas, an oil change, and we're going to check the air pressure.
Yeah. I'm guessing they charge more than that, but anyway.
Yeah.
Let's get into the first period of this week's show, and we will start off with a recap of all the games from the last 7 days in the NHL. We'll give you a score, give you a quick note, and then once the day's action has been briefly recapped, we may have a comment or two on what happened in a game or two of those. So let us go back to last Wednesday, where we had three games on the schedule, but two games were actually played. We'll start with the Red Wings knocking off the Panthers in Florida 3-2 in overtime. Dylan Larkin with the overtime game winner for Detroit on the power play as the Red Wings snapped a 10-game losing streak against Florida. The Canadiens edged the Devils in New Jersey 3-2. Montreal had a 2-0 lead going into the third, then needed Cole Caulfield's tie-breaking goal to pull out the victory. Now, the Blackhawks were to play at the Sabres that night. However, because of weather conditions, that game was postponed for a day. And I don't know if you saw this, Doug, but that was to be, believe it or not, the TNT national broadcast game, the Blackhawks and Sabres.
Yeah, because of Connor Bedard.
Right. That obviously
which is, again, why we talked about why the NHL, we suspected they may have fixed the lottery, because getting him on the Blackhawks allows them to put the Blackhawks on national TV. Justify it. You're not going to do that if it's Adam Fantilli or Leo Carlson on the Blackhawks.
Correct.
And they're not going to put the Ducks, the Blue Jackets, or the Coyotes on national TV 14 times. So there was a financial incentive for the entire NHL to have the Blackhawks win that, which is why it's so easy to believe it was rigged, even though I'm 90% sure it was not.
Yeah, I hear you. So the TNT broadcast had to be switched, and they decided to air the Red Wings Panthers game instead, which was a fine game, as I mentioned, 3-2 overtime, yeah. And probably was a better matchup regardless. I mean, Red Wings are knocking on the door to get in the playoffs. Panthers look like they're going to be in there. But I did see that the TNT crew, and let me see if I can go by heart. You've got Liam McHugh. I'm guessing he did the play-by-play. And then you had a host of analysts with Paul Bissonnette, Henrik Lundqvist. I'm not sure if Wayne Gretzky was there. He kind of makes an appearance occasionally, usually at the end of the year of the playoffs. And then Anson Carter. So they called the game from the studio, which at one time would have seemed crazy. But in today's world, that actually happens more often than not for a lot of different broadcasts where some people are in a room somewhere. They're not actually at the game, and they call the game. I don't know how it went. I didn't see it, but kind of an interesting little situation there for
what do you think about that as a broadcaster?
Because I hate it. I hate it.
Let's pull the veil back a little bit. If you're watching a college football game and it isn't a big college football game, an SEC broadcast on CBS or NBC or ABC or ESPN, most likely the crew is not at the game. They are, especially for Fox Sports 1 games and a lot of ESPN Plus broadcasts, they are at a central location and they're watching the game on TV just like you are and calling it from there. I hate it as well. It's an economics thing. Because you can have the same crew call multiple games in a weekend without having to travel because it's just literally changing the channel. Hey, now we're watching this game. So I hate it. There's a lot that can be gained from being on site, obviously, and you lose that when you're not there. And they're relying completely on what we're seeing. And it's basically like having people sitting on the couch next to you at that point, just commenting on the game, as opposed to telling you, I saw something away from the play, or, oh, that guy looks hurt, or there were too many men on the ice, or, wow, the goalie. There's no personal observances, and it impacts the broadcast in a negative way. I get the financials of it, but I absolutely hate it.
Agreed in every way, and I would hate it as a broadcaster as well, although I guess maybe if you're someone who, you know, has to travel a lot, maybe there's a party that actually likes that. I don't know. But I think, you know, that's always part of the appeal of it to me, just from a broadcast standpoint. Get out to experience the environment of the game. What's going on?
This crowd is going crazy. They're jawing at the bench, whatever the case may be.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm with you.
I would say, though, if I was asked to do that, if I'm told by the network that's hired me, we're going to have you broadcast this game, we're not actually going to send you to the game, I'd say, well, obviously you're not asking me, you're telling me, so okay. But I want it on the biggest screen possible. If you can put this on a massive screen so that it's almost like a movie theater, I want it larger than life so that I can feel like I'm at the spot. I don't want to be watching it on a 45-inch TV or something, because that's just not going to give me the detail I need or the sense of being there.
I actually kind of know somebody who's in this situation. There's a local known broadcaster named Petros Papadakis, and he does college football.
He does a lot of college football games and never travels.
And he comes on one of the shows I'm on every week, and he was asked about this. And the plus side is he gets to work more. But the downside is, and the plus side is, he doesn't have to travel as much, and he's got, you know, you got a family and that, and there's some appeal to that. But then the downside is you're not there. You don't feel the environment. It's a sterile kind of a thing. So yeah. It's something that's we're going to have more of than not less going forward. That's for sure.
I mean, you talk about they don't send, remember when we started this podcast, they had stopped sending reporters on the road with the Kings and Ducks,
right?
They're going to stop sending broadcast crews on the road. Your Kings broadcast is going to be done from LA every time, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a financial, because the team doesn't care and the ratings aren't going to change and they can save money.
Oh yeah.
Why are we sending these people on the road for flights, per diem, all this stuff, when I can just have you do it from here?
Nope. It's true. It's true. Did you want to comment on either of the two games real quick, or did we comment?
No, I mean, it was I'm glad they upgraded to the Red Wings Panthers game. That's a possible playoff preview, depending on where the Panthers end up in their division and if the Red Wings stay as a wild card team. That's a great matchup, much better than Blackhawks Sabres.
All right, let's move on to Thursday, where we had 13 games on the schedule, including the Oilers making it 12 wins in a row with a 4-2 victory over the Kraken. Warren Fogle had a pair of goals. Leon Draisaitl had a 4-point game with a goal and 3 assists. Edmonton now 20-3 in their last 23 games. Bruins beat the Avalanche 5-2. David Pastrnak with the hat trick for Boston, who improved to 8-1-3 in their last 12 games. Colorado's Cale Makar had an assist, but fell a point short of tying Bruins legend and Hall of Famer Bobby Orr for the fastest defenseman to reach 300 points, which was interesting since they were playing the Bruins. Golden Knights knock off the Rangers 5-1. Ivan Barbashev had a pair of goals for Vegas. Logan Thompson, 29 saves in net. You had the Flyers beating the Stars 5-1. Owen Tippett, two goals for Philadelphia, including a spinorama backhand highlight goal that had the hockey world buzzing. Scott Laughton also scored on a penalty shot on this one. And Samuel Ersson only had to make 15 saves in the win. Philadelphia snapped a seven-game losing skid against Dallas. Maple Leafs edged the Flames in Calgary 4-3. Austin Matthews, a hat trick, goals 35, 36, and 37 that included the game-winning goal. Predators edged the Kings in LA 2-1. Gustav Nyquist, the game winner. UC Saros, 33 saves in net. LA had lost 10 of 11 at that point. Canucks got by the Coyotes 2-1. Dakota Joshua with the game winning goal. Elias Pettersson gets his 24th, and Thatcher Demko had 20 saves in net. Capitals knock off the Blues 5-2. TJ Oshie with the hat trick, just goals 5, 6, and 7 on the season for him. Nathan Walker, our old friend of the show, had both St. Louis goals in the loss. Lightning roll over the Wild 7-3. Anthony Cirelli had two goals. Nikita Kucherov, three assists to reach 500 assists in his career. We have the Senators knocking off the Canadiens 6-2. Ottawa, six different goal scorers in this one. Brady Tkachuk gets his 19th. Tim Stützle, a goal and two assists. And the Sabres shut out the Blackhawks 3-0. That was the rescheduled game from the day before. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, 19 saves for his second straight shutout.
Well, I want to talk about two games in this one, and both of them are examples of why instant replay sucks. Let's start with Calgary-Toronto. We thought Connor Zeri tied the game. He scored, but there was much celebration. There was nothing controversial about it. But wait, the Maple Leafs have challenged the goal. Why? Well, 8 seconds before the shot even happened, the puck hit Blake Coleman's hand. And that counts as a hand pass, and because it never left the offensive zone, so the goal was waved off. Sheldon Keefe, the head coach of the Maple Leafs, said he didn't even see it happen, but he challenged it because his review team upstairs told him to, and it was waved off. That has absolutely nothing to do with the goal. It's awful. Then we've got the Seattle-Edmonton game. It's late in the second. It's 3-2 Edmonton. Great pass up the ice to Alex Wenberg, who goes in and scores a goal to tie the game late in the second period. Again, there is much celebration for Seattle. But wait, it was waved off because Kyler Yamamoto was offsides. How was he offsides? Well, he was changing. He was going off the ice for a change, and the door is inside the offensive zone. As you know, on any NHL rink, there's two doors on the bench. One is inside the blue line. The other is in the neutral zone. He was going to the one inside the offensive zone. He was a foot away from the boards, back to the play, obviously changing. Had absolutely nothing to do with it, but they waved it off because he was offside. These are examples of the overreach of instant replay and review. These are not why review exists. Review is there to correct blown calls, not enforce the minutiae of the rule book on things that were irrelevant to the play. That puck hitting Blake Coleman's hand had nothing to do with that goal being scored or the puck remaining in the offensive zone. Kyler Yamamoto was literally going off the ice for an obvious change. And if we're going to not call too many men on the ice because guys are a foot away from the boards, we allow that all the time. We should apply the same. That person should no longer exist in the rule book if they're clearly going for a change. If they're a foot away, I get that they're offsides. I get that they're, but it has nothing to do with the play. The defense is not guarding him or thinking he's going to get the puck. They've abandoned him to go in front, and the puck was on the complete other side of the ice. So those are two goals that change the outcome of games that should have counted, that we want to have more scoring in this league, and yet we're using the minutiae of the rule book to take goals off the board that should stand, and I hate it. Absolutely hate it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think instant replay, when you look at most sports, and I think they're even using it in the NBA now, although I don't know how really, but anyway.
They have rules in the NBA?
Apparently.
I saw a guy go with no dribbles from above the three-point line to slam dunk it, and he'd not get called for traveling.
Well, there was a, I know this because of my job, there was a controversial ending the last night where they called double dribble, and I'm like, they called a double dribble? But the coach was trying, the guy was like trapped by, you know, he got double teamed and he was trapped, and the coach was trying to call timeout because coaches can call a timeout during a play like that. It used to be just the players could do it, but they changed the rule anyway. So the coach is calling timeout, and the referees didn't see him, and so they called the double dribble, and then he got angry because he wanted to call a timeout. They ended up calling a technical foul on him, and then they ended up losing by like 2 points or whatever. So anyway, but you're right. Yeah, I'm okay in the NHL with goalie interference and puck over the line. Those are very – it's like in football, turnovers and touchdowns. Those crucial kind of plays, yes, let's get those right. But yeah, the stuff like the offside and the hand pass and those types of things are almost always inconsequential. So what do we?
Yeah, if it directly led to it, if Blake Coleman had deflected the puck with his hand to the guy that then shot it, of course. But 8 seconds has nothing to do with it. If the coach needs to be told from video review guys upstairs, hey, you got to review this. And a guy going for a change is not offside. He's no longer in the play. He's forfeited his participation in the play. It bothers me that we see this, because if you want to do that, then in my opinion, under the guise of we got to get it right, why do we not enforce the entire rule book like that? Why can't I point at any rule and say, wait a minute, this guy did a slash 5 seconds ago, and we need to wave off the goal, and he needs to be in the penalty box, or there was a cross check. It's ridiculous.
I hear you.
Yeah, there was a cross check. It was, you know, 50 feet away from the play. It was 10 seconds ago, but it was during this offensive zone possession, so no goal. This isn't what the fans want. This shouldn't be what the league wants.
Yeah.
And it's stupid.
All right, let's move on to Friday. We had four games with the Wild beating the Panthers in Florida 6-4. Minnesota scoring 5 power play goals in this one. Kirill Kaprizov had 2 of them. Marc-Andre Fleury left with an injury in this one. This was a game that featured a suspension, which we'll talk about coming up. Hurricanes over the Red Wings 4-2. Andre Svechnikov gets the power play goal in the third period. That was the game winner. The Blackhawks surprised the Islanders 4-3 in overtime. Defenseman Seth Jones' first goal of the season was the overtime game winner for Chicago. Brock Nelson did get his 20th of the year in the loss for New York. And the Devils down the Blue Jackets in Columbus 4-1. New Jersey scoring 4 goals in the second period. Vitek Vanacek, 29 saves in net.
I don't have the proof, but I have to think the loss to the Blackhawks was the breaking point for Lou Lamoriello.
Yep.
That's it. This is an AHL team we're playing, essentially. Yeah. This is garbage on ice, and we just lost. Nope. No more. I will not stand for this anymore, because when you've got guys like Joey Anderson and Boris Kachuk and Jason Dickinson scoring goals, Jason Dickinson had a 3-point night. We got no answer for Jason Dickinson, coach. Unacceptable. Unacceptable. I can't kick players anymore. I can't hit players anymore. I can't yell and do all the things that they used to do in the 80s. Unacceptable. We need to stop. We need to be able to stop Jason Dickinson from lighting us up. And they only had 24 shots on goal in the entire game, yet they won. Their one shot in overtime went in, or in the shootout. They won in the shootout. So I think this was the breaking point for Lou.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Saturday. 12 games to let you know about, including the Oilers winning again, 13 in a row, with a 3-1 victory in Calgary over the Flames. That's the longest winning streak by a Canadian team in NHL history, which is also kind of shocking considering we talked about the Oilers and the Montreal Canadiens back in the heyday. But of course, you know, there is the shootout and overtime. We do need to point that out. So that does make it a bit easier
to win. They don't get the ties. Yeah.
Right. Sam Gagner gets the game winner. Zach Hyman, his 28th of the year, and Stuart Skinner had 26 saves in net. Canucks down the Maple Leafs 6-4. Connor Garland and Nils Höglander each had a pair of goals. William Nylander had two in defeat for Toronto. Mitch Marner's shorthanded goal was his 20th of the year. Avalanche over the Flyers 7-4. Nathan MacKinnon, a 5-point game with two goals and three assists. Logan O'Connor with the hat trick as well for Colorado. Kings edge the Rangers, and former LA Stanley Cup winning goalie Jonathan Quick 2-1. Quinton Byfield gets the game-winning goal. David Rittich had 22 saves in net. Jonathan Quick started the season 9-0-1. At that point, he had lost five in a row.
I believe I was told by the Locked On LA Kings guy that the Kings were guaranteed to lose that game if Jonathan Quick started.
Well, that's yeah. Considering how the Kings have played lately, it certainly seemed in line with yes. what was going on. But
yes.
Fortunately, they did get the win. Stars down the Devils 6-2. Roope Hintz, two goals, numbers 19 and 20 for Dallas. Golden Knights over the Penguins 3-2. Rookie Brendan Brisson, first career goal, was the game winner for Vegas as they scored all three of their goals in the third period to rally for the victory. Blues shut out the Capitals 2-0. Jordan Bennington, 18 saves in the shutout, the 14th shutout of his NHL career.
Correction on that one. It was 3-0.
3-0. Thank you. Coyotes edge the Predators 3-2. Clayton Keller, two goals, and Michael Carconi gets the game winner for Arizona. Jets get by the Senators 2-1 in overtime. Nikolai Ehlers, the overtime game winner for Winnipeg. Connor Hellebuyck, 34 saves in net, and Jonas Korpisalo, 29 saves in the tough loss for Ottawa. Bruins crush the Canadiens 9-4. Danton Heinen, first career hat trick for Boston. David Pastrnak had a goal and assist, and Brad Marchand scored his 20th of the year. 11 straight seasons, he has had a 20-goal season or more. Lightning down the Sabres 3-1. Tyler Motte's shorthanded unassisted goal was the game winner, and Jonas Johansson had 26 saves in net for Tampa Bay to get the win. And the Sharks defeat the Ducks 5-3. San Jose captain Logan Couture made his return from injury after missing 45 games with a back injury. He picked up an assist.
We have audio, actually, from the Ducks locker room after the game, Eddie. Would you like to hear that?
I certainly would.
Losing is a disease as contagious as syphilis, as deadly as polio.
Well, that is deadly.
When you lose to the San Jose Sharks, it's never a proud day. And the retrospect, you know, you look back and you say, my goodness, if they had set the over-under for the Canadiens-Bruins game at 12.5, I think most people would have thought it was a typo and loaded up on the under, and they would have lost. 13 goals in my favorite rivalry still of the NHL, the two of the oldest rivals in the NHL, and the Bruins get the rare boat race win. When you give up four goals and you still have a boat race win, that's a hell of a game. Not a great day for the goalies, but a easy win for Boston in that one. And I got to say, Jonas Johansson, I remember his song Hot, Hot, Hot. Loved it back in the 80s. Fine win from him in net for Tampa Bay.
Well, that was not necessary. Let's move on to Sunday. We had six games on the schedule. The Islanders edged the Stars 2-1 in overtime. And Bo Horvat with the overtime game winner. Ilya Sorokin had 41 saves in net. And that was the coaching debut in New York of Patrick Waugh wins his first game as head coach of the New York Islanders. Details on that coming up in just a bit.
Like I said, the breaking point. Yeah. We lose to Chicago, unacceptable. We make a coaching change and we beat the Dallas Stars, two opposite ends of the spectrum in the NHL standings.
Senators surprised the Flyers in Philadelphia 5-3. Ottawa, three unanswered goals in the third period. Tim Stützle had two goals in the victory. Philadelphia defenseman Igor Zamula had two goals in the loss. He had three career goals coming into the game. We do a show, and we mention a lot of names, and we watch a lot of hockey, but still occasionally you hear a name, and you're like, I have never heard of that guy in my life. So congratulations, Igor Zamula, for your two-goal game in defeat.
He sounds like a villain from a 70s James Bond movie.
Yeah.
Be careful. You are going into
the lair of Igor Zamula.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going on to the island of Igor Zamula.
The island of Dr. Zamula.
Yeah.
The Wild knocked off the Hurricanes in Carolina 5-2. Kirill Kaprizov's second career hat trick in the victory for him. Maple Leafs defeat the Kraken in Seattle 3-1. Austin Matthews, his 38th goal of the year. Ilya Samsonov only had to make 16 saves in the win. Red Wings got by the Lightning 2-1. Daniel Sprong with the game winner, and Alex Lyon had 25 saves in net in the win for Detroit. And the Rangers down the Ducks in Anaheim 5-2. New York fell behind 2-0 after a pair of Adam Henrique goals in the first period, then scored 5 unanswered. Artemi Panarin had one of them, his 28th of the season.
The only ones I wanted to talk about, like I said, I was impressed by the Islanders' first effort, but I think that was, I was pretty confident they were going to win after that shock to the system of a coaching change. And Minnesota with the 5-2 win, they're starting to heat up a little bit. I know they got a long way to go to get back in the playoff race because they buried themselves, but that was their third straight win, I believe. And they're starting to play some better hockey. And if they can get it going, they still have the talent to make a run here in the second half of the season. But they have really buried themselves in the standings, as we will get to in a little bit.
Yeah, unfortunately, they also had a big injury announcement this week that is not going to help. Let's move on to Monday, where we had six games. The Bruins defeat the Jets 4-1 in a battle of division leaders. Winnipeg's streak of allowing a team to score three or fewer goals ends at 34 in a row. Jeremy Swayman, 20 saves in net in the win for Boston. Devils edged the Golden Knights 6-5 in overtime. Tyler Toffoli, the hat trick, with the third goal being the overtime game winner and his 20th of the season. Curtis Lazar had a pair of goals as well for New Jersey. Jonathan Marchessault, two goals for the Golden Knights in a losing effort. Coyotes beat the Penguins 5-2. Arizona snapped an 11-game losing skid against Pittsburgh with some help from the Penguins. Arizona was on a power play in this game. Jason Zucker was called for a delayed penalty. Pittsburgh pulled goalie Tristan Jarry. Eric Karlsson decided to pass the puck back to teammate Evgeny Malkin, who saw the puck go off his stick and into their own net for an own goal. Sidney Crosby gets his 27th of the year.
I was in attendance for a game where that happened many years ago. The Ducks were playing. Obviously, I was at the Ducks game. And delayed penalty. Great. Get the extra attacker out there. Great. Adam Oates. Man never shot a puck in his life. He passed it back. He was in the offensive zone. Passed it back to the point. Completely missed the dude. Went into the open net. Head slap, my God. Adam Oates finally shoots it on net, and it's our net.
The Panthers down the Predators in Nashville 4-1. Sam Reinhart, his 34th goal of the year for Florida, and Anthony Stolarz had 26 saves in net in the win. Canucks blanked the Blackhawks 2-0. Thatcher Demko, 31 saves for his fifth shutout of the season. And the Sharks beat the Kings in L.A. 4-3 in a shootout. And much like the loss for the Islanders to the Blackhawks, the Kings losing at home to the Sharks in the situation they're in. And yet it still appears that there is no coaching change imminent in Los Angeles, which is a bit of a head scratcher. Let's move on to Tuesday, where we had nine games. Oh,
I don't get to comment.
I apologize. I apologize. My bitterness over the Kings losing to the Sharks clouded my judgment there. I apologize. I
mean, take it easy, man.
Go ahead.
Bring it back. Now, you mentioned the Jets streak.
Yeah.
Ends.
Yeah.
Is that fair when the last goal was an empty netter?
It is what it is. Yep.
Yeah. That's a pisser for it to end on that. But still, what is the more impressive streak? Edmonton's winning streak or Winnipeg's streak of 30 plus games without giving up more than three goals?
I think it's Winnipeg, especially in today's game with the offense being what it is.
Yeah.
I would go Winnipeg.
I would agree. It is amazing how well they were able to, because that's no nights off. You're never having a bad game defensively. The goalie didn't just have a bad night and let in some soft goals, or like that we saw in this one, an empty netter. You know, you're down 3-2 and you give up an empty net goal to make it 4-2. It was an amazing streak, and they start anew in their next game, perhaps. But the game of the night to me was Vegas, New Jersey. New Jersey is such a weird team. They lose games they should win. They win games they should lose. They're still on the outside of the playoffs picture. I cannot figure them out. I'm sure they're as frustrated as anybody, more so because they know they have the talent to do great things. And yet they feel a lot like Florida last year to me. If they make the playoffs, I think they're dangerous. but they may not even make the playoffs. And it's baffling because they're going to get Jack Hughes back at some point. He's one of the best players in the league, and that's going to be a huge burst. But they, even with Jack Hughes, they were just seemed like a misfiring car. They cannot get momentum and get on a run like Edmonton has, like Minnesota is, like different teams have put together to get themselves back in a playoff picture.
All right, let's move on to Tuesday, where we had 9 games on the schedule. And this is the final day that we'll be recapping for this week. The Oilers beat the Blue Jackets 4-1. As we record this show, Edmonton is still riding a winning streak. It is now at 14 in a row. It is tied for the 4th longest winning streak in NHL history. The record is 17 by the 1992-93 Pittsburgh Penguins. Doug, I have a trivia question for you.
I love it.
7 teams in NHL history have had a winning streak of 14 games or more in a season. That's where the Oilers are right now.
Okay.
How many of those 7 teams went on to win the Stanley Cup?
I will say 0.
You're close. It's 1. The 1981-82 New York Islanders won 15 straight games and that year went on to win the Stanley Cup. All 6 of those other teams that had a winning streak of 14 or more did not win the Stanley Cup. So take
I have a I have a stat for you, Eddie All Garcia. Right. If the Edmonton Oilers extend their winning streak to 15 games, that would give them 30 points in their last 15 games. The Blackhawks and Sharks have 30 points on the season in 47 and 48 games, respectively. That it's is how heater. Much of a heater there are.
Yeah, there ain't no doubt. There ain't no doubt that they are.
They have more right wins now, in a row than San Jose has wins this season.
Yeah, but as we have been reminded many times in the National Hockey League, that don't mean nothing when you get in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So we'll
That's
see.
Correct. It's a restart. But I will. Let's go back a week. I was not in the second period. Thanks to Jeff Ponder for filling in. You guys talked about MVP, and you mentioned my pick was Connor McDavid, and I wanted to expand on that. As I said last week, this is a guy that was the MVP pick for me because he determines the fortune of that team. He got the coach fired. He picked the new coach. He decided to start playing well. He is now doing very well, and they are unstoppable. That is the most valuable player. He controls that team's fortunes on and off the ice.
Let's move on to the Golden Knights, edging the Islanders in New York 3-2. So Patrick Waugh is no longer undefeated. Aiden Hill is back. His return from injury. He'd been out since December the 17th with a lower body injury. He had 40 saves in the victory, and Nicholas Waugh gets the game-winning goal for Vegas. Lightning knock off the Flyers 6-3. Nikita Kucherov with a hat trick. Goals 29, 30, and 31, who was my pick for midseason MVP. Stars got by the Red Wings in Detroit 5-4. Roope Hintz, 2 goals, including the game winner for Dallas. Wild over the Capitals 5-3. Marcus Johansson with 2 goals for Minnesota against his old team. And Joel Eriksson Ek hits the 20-goal mark for Minnesota. Sharks beat the Rangers 3-2 in overtime. Tomas Hertl with the OT game winner to give San Jose its season-high 3-game winning streak. Blues got by the Flames in Calgary 4-3. Brandon Saad, 2 goals, including the game winner with 48 seconds left. Yegor Sharangovich hit the 20-goal mark in the loss for Calgary. Senators down the Canadiens in Montreal 4-1. Shane Pinto gets his first goal of the season back from his suspension. Jonas Korpisalo, 24 saves in net. Ottawa has now won 8 straight head-to-head against Montreal. And the Ducks down the Sabres 4-2. Jakob Silverberg, 2 goals, and defenseman Owen Zellweger an assist in his NHL debut.
Yeah, the Ducks get the win, an impressive game from John Gibson. You mentioned Adam Henrique had a couple goals against the Rangers in their loss. I hope both continue to play well leading up to the trade deadline. I'll put it that way. And the Ducks are almost they've almost baited the hook enough to get me to start watching them again. Because Olin Zellweger is up. So if I can watch Olin Zellweger, a good rookie that I haven't seen much of other than preseason, Jackson Lacombe, good rookie, Leo Carlson, good rookie, Mason McTavish, good young player. Now we're talking. I'm still going to hold out and wait for the return of Pavel Minchikov. See, at the end of the season, I think I'll revisit the team when they called up Cutter Gauthier. And they have a full lineup of youngsters. I'll watch the last 9-10 games or so. But nice to see him win a game, at least, even on paper. And you mentioned the game-winning goal, Eddie, in the Golden Knights Islanders game. Patrick Waugh was behind the bench. Nicholas Waugh scored the game-winning goal. Any relation?
No, I don't believe so, no.
I don't believe so either.
No.
But you never know. I'm sure a distant relation.
Yeah, at some point, I guess, if you go back far enough, there was something. Anything else, or shall we get into the standings as they are here on this Wednesday, January the 24th?
Well, it was an interesting week for a lot of teams that are on the cusp. Calgary was playing well, didn't have a good week. Edmonton, of course, on the heater. Seattle was on a red hot streak. They've completely cooled off and fallen off the cliff. Washington struggling. So it's the standings are going to change just because a lot of teams either stayed hot or really cooled off.
All right, let's start over in the Eastern Conference. As far as the standings, we'll start with the Metropolitan Division, where we do have the same top three as a week ago, the New York Rangers in first place. They've been struggling a bit, but Philadelphia not really catching too much ground. It's a five-point lead for New York on Philadelphia for the top spot of the Metro. Carolina is still your third-place team. In the Atlantic Division, Boston on top with 67 points. That leads the Eastern Conference, second in the NHL. Florida, 7 points back of Boston in second place. And Tampa Bay has moved into the top three. The Lightning playing well of late. Jump up from the number two wildcard spot in the East to third place in the Atlantic Division. As far as the wildcard teams, the team that dropped out of the top three in the Atlantic, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Is there a coaching change imminent there? They are now the number one wildcard team in the East. And Detroit drops from the number one to the number two wildcard spot in the Eastern Conference. The Devils and Islanders are both 2 points out of a wildcard spot. Washington is 3 points back. Over in the West, we'll start with the Pacific Division. It is not the same top three. I know this very well as a Kings fan. Vancouver is your top team, 62 points for them. 68 points, which is tied with Winnipeg for the lead in the NHL.
They are far clear of Winnipeg. Winnipeg has 64. Vancouver leads the President's Trophy race.
I apologize. Thank you for correcting me on that. Vegas is still in second place in Pacific, and Edmonton finally overtook the LA Kings. We saw it coming. At least I certainly did. Edmonton moving from the number one wildcard spot in the West to the third spot in the Pacific.
When you're driving on the freeway, Eddie, and you see a car coming up behind you and it's flashing its brights and it's moving fast, that was the Oilers to the Kings. 14 straight wins was just get out of our way. We're passing you one way or the other.
Yeah, I'm surprised, frankly, that the Kings held on for as long as they did.
It tells you how bad Edmonton was at the beginning of the season and how good LA was.
Yeah. In the Central Division, Winnipeg on top. Colorado is in second. I believe it's a 1 point lead for Winnipeg on Colorado at this point. So
that is correct. It's contested. 2 points from first to third in the Central, which is fantastic.
Dallas in third place. Your two wildcard teams in the West right now are the LA Kings with the number one wildcard spot sliding down from the third spot in the Pacific, and Nashville remains the number two wildcard spot. Arizona is 2 points back of a wildcard spot. St. Louis is 3 points out of a wildcard spot. So your playoff matches, if the season were to end today, in the East, you'd have Boston versus Detroit, the Rangers versus the Maple Leafs, Panthers versus the Lightning, and the Flyers versus the Hurricanes. In the West, you would have Winnipeg versus LA, Canucks versus Predators, Oilers versus Golden Knights, and Avalanche versus Stars.
The Central is going to be amazing. I mean, Winnipeg, Colorado, and Dallas being separated by 2 points collectively is amazing. Winnipeg does have two games in hand on both the Avalanche and the Stars, so keep that in mind, but that's going to be a very tight race. And then Nashville, the race at the bottom, or in the middle, I should say, of the Central, Nashville, Arizona, St. Louis, all 3 points apart, fighting for one playoff spot. That's going to be a fantastic race. In the Pacific, the division, I think, is Vancouver's to lose. Maybe Vegas can overtake them in time. Edmonton, as hot as they are not going to win the division, most likely, but they are solidifying themselves. And here's a statement we haven't said much of the Kings this year, Eddie. Edmonton has a game in hand on LA. LA's always been one of the teams that have the most games in hand. Edmonton actually has a game in hand on LA now with a 2-point lead. and playing well. Even this streak has to end at some point, obviously. They're not going to win out the rest of the season. But I find it hard to believe that Edmonton would cool off to a point that LA would catch and pass them at this point. LA is fighting for a wild card spot at this point in the playoffs. And if you look at the last 10 games, you mentioned the Rangers starting to struggle a little bit in the Metropolitan. Only three wins in their last 10 games, and they lose two of the three games in this California swing to LA and San Jose. That's unacceptable. If they had lost to the Ducks, my goodness, there would be much consternation and hand-wringing going on in New York of what the hell happened out there. Philadelphia, I worry about because of news we're going to get to in a second. The Atlantic, I think, is absolutely loaded. If Toronto is in a fight for a wild card spot, which they are right now, but they do have three games in hand on Tampa, and they're only 1 point back. But if they end up in a wild card spot, or worst case scenario, miss the playoffs entirely, holy smokes, will that be something. It's going to be, the Islanders have made their coaching change, and we'll see what the impact of that is. They only had three wins in their last 10 games going into this coming week. So we'll see what Patrick Waugh can do behind their bench. The Devils, as I said, at some point have to kick in to gear and get themselves in a playoff spot. And that means either if both of those teams make it, then two teams are coming out. And I can't look at the standings and say, I know who it's going to be. I think Philadelphia is coming out. I don't think they'll make it at the end of the day, but somebody else has to miss if those two teams make it. This is a fun time of year. I don't have a rooting interest because my team sucks and has for many years, but it is fun to just watch games with no, as you mentioned with the playoffs, just kind of no rooting interest, just leaning back, watching a game for the enjoyment of it.
Yeah, and now that football season is getting ready to wrap up, I look forward to being able to watch more games just for the pleasure of it that do not involve the Kings, as we did last week with that ABC game on the Saturday, right, which was fun. Let's check the stats. Your points leader is Nikita Kucherov of Tampa Bay with 80. Nathan McKinnon's got 77, and then you've got David Pastrnak with 67. For the Boston Bruins. As far as your goal scoring leader, Austin Matthews is on fire right now, but it's not helping the Leafs get be on fire as well. But Austin Matthews has 38 goals in 44 games. Sam Reinhart is your surprising runner-up right now with 34 goals. Then you've got Nikita Kucherov with 31 and David Pastrnak with 30 on the season.
Brock Besser has significantly cooled off from his early season heater. He still has 27 goals, which is a fine season. You know, if you go into a year and you say you can pencil him in for 27 goals, you'd be delighted. He had 18 last year. He had 23 in each of the last 2 years. He's only two goals away from his career high of 29, which was back in his rookie year. So still a great season for him, but he has significantly cooled off from the start he had.
As for the goaltenders, we mentioned Aiden Hill is now back for Vegas. He is the only goalie that has a goals against average under two. We'll see if that continues with his workload, maybe getting a little bit more, but he's at 1.93 with the GAA. Connor Hellebuck would be, you know, the goaltender, which is played pretty much every game, who is, you know, realistically your top goaltender for goals against. He's at 2.17. Then you've got Charlie Lindgren of Washington, Jeremy Swayman of Boston, Joey Decord of Seattle would be your top five. As far as save percentage goes, again, it's Aiden Hill at 935, Charlie Lindgren of Washington, 926, Connor Hellebuck of Winnipeg, 925, Jeremy Swayman of Boston, 923, and then Thatcher Demko of Vancouver, Joey Decord of Seattle, both at 922. All right, let us get into the news from this past week in the NHL, and we have a developing story as we go on the air here in the NHL. So here's a kind of a summary of what we know, and you can draw your own conclusions from this.
Right, we'll list the facts.
Yeah,
and I asked you before we went on the air, Eddie, are you a believer in the "where there's smoke, there's fire" philosophy?
Yeah.
And you said, you know, it depends, you know, situation. This is one that it's very hard not to connect.
Correct.
The pieces.
Dylan Dubé of the Calgary Flames has taken a leave of absence from the team, citing mental health. Carter Hart, goaltender for the Flyers, their number one goalie, has taken a leave of absence, citing personal reasons. the Toronto Globe. Is it Toronto Globe? The Globe.
Well, the Devils have two guys, right?
Yep. That's, okay. Yeah, but this is a kind of a timeline here.
Okay.
The Globe published an article of the London police asking five members of the 2018 Canadian World Junior team to surrender and face charges.
For sexual assault.
Right. Also, after that, Alex Formanton, formerly of the NHL, has taken a leave of absence from his team in Switzerland and is apparently returning to Canada. And Michael McLeod and Cal Foote of the Devils have been granted leaves of absences. No reason was given.
Now, what do those five players have in common? They were all members of the 2018 Canadian National Junior Team.
Yeah.
There are five players that have been given personal leaves of absence in the last few days. The London, Ontario police have asked five players from that team to surrender themselves to face charges for sexual assault. It's very hard not to surmise that those five players will be facing charges in the very near future, and this personal leave of absence will extend to the remainder of the season, which is why I said I worry about the Philadelphia Flyers.
Right, because the biggest name on there clearly is Carter Hart. There,
right, as far as a player, but yeah, it's you're taking two players off the Devils roster as well, and they're already hampered by injuries. These are all going to have impacts on the NHL teams, except for Alex Formanton, who was playing over in Switzerland. But forget that. This is, 6 years later, these guys are finally potentially facing justice for their actions. This has been a long going investigation, and it's one that comes up every now and then, and we hear about it and we think, oh my goodness, what could it be? You get your assumptions based on the team and who was on there. But this is exactly what we've not been waiting for, but kind of been dreading, is five players have been asked to surrender themselves to face charges. Five players have been granted a leave of absence. The biggest smoking gun is the fact that Alex Formanton, not even in the NHL, playing in Switzerland, gets a leave of absence and returns to Canada. Why would he return to Canada? Well, you have to be in Canada to surrender yourself to face charges. So this is an awful, awful situation for everybody involved. But as we have always said, if these guys are guilty, then we hope they face the punishment for their actions. And if they are innocent, we hope their names are cleared as soon as possible. But ugly situation for the NHL. And they're going to be dealing with this in the headlines across Canada, certainly. And I'm sure this will trickle into the national news and sports discussion here in America as well.
And I just scrolling through Twitter here, or X, or whatever they're calling it. Katie Strang of The Athletic reached out to NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly, and he said the league has no comment at this time.
Cowards.
I mean, come on. What are they going to say?
They knew this was coming. So
yeah, well, still, I mean, they're not going to comment on this. I mean,
no, this has nothing to do with anything in the NHL, is what they could say. And the NHL has no comment because this has nothing to do with their NHL careers or performance. And then when the charges get filed, they will address it then.
We thought the big story this week was going to be Patrick Waugh. He is back as a NHL head coach, as we mentioned. New York Islanders firing Lane Lambert and hiring Patrick Waugh in a stunning move that not a lot of people saw coming, at least if they thought there might be a coaching change. I don't know that Patrick Waugh was one of those names, but Lou Lamoriello pulling the trigger. Old Lou getting the Hall of Fame, fellow Hall of Famer, right? Getting
funny Patrick that he Waugh. Allows his coaches to have facial hair.
No, he does not. Patrick Waugh is clean shaven now.
Is that right?
Yes, he is. Absolutely.
Because of the rule?
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is.
Isn't that amazing?
That's,
if you want to coach for me, you're going to shave your face.
Yeah. He said, okay.
You're going to add a comma to my contract.
Lane Lambert was midway through his second season coaching the Islanders. You mentioned the loss to the Blackhawks, and the Islanders are kind of floating around a wild card spot. Clearly, that wasn't good enough for Lou Lamoriello, who has made a change. maybe Rob Blake in LA might want to take note of that or not. Patrick Waugh, of course, was the Avalanche head coach after three seasons back in 2013-16. You can go back and listen to what we thought about that at the time here on the Puck Podcast. But he resigned a month before training camp. And I believe it was then Jared Bednar who took over. And the rest is history, I guess, as
How'd
they
that
say.
Work out?
Worked out really well, actually.
Yeah.
They won a Stanley Cup with him, and he's been one of the better coaches in the league. But Patrick Waugh, four-time Stanley Cup winner as a player. He is third in the NHL in career wins among goaltenders. Was a Jack Adams Award winner as Coach of the Year, you might have forgotten, back in 2013-14 after guiding the Avalanche to the playoffs. That was Nathan MacKinnon's rookie season. And Patrick Waugh has been, for the most part, serving as, I believe, owner, GM, and head coach of the Quebec Ramparts in the Quebec Maritime Junior Hockey League. That's where he's been spending most of his time. I think that was where he was before and then after the stint in Colorado. Maybe not owner, but definitely GM and coach. Yeah. But that's where he comes from. And now Patrick Waugh back in the NHL. We'll see how it works out for him.
No, it is a I didn't see this coming.
No.
Because I don't follow the Islanders on a close basis to where I thought maybe there was a coaching change. But
still.
Put yourself in the position.
Yeah, even if you're going to make a coaching change. I mean, there's some other guys out there that I think are, no offense to Patrick Waugh, maybe it works out for him, but.
No, put yourself in a position of being an Islanders player, though. Okay.
Yeah.
You lose to the Blackhawks. You're taking off the gear. You're listening to the post-game speech. You're depressed. The season's not going the way you think. The next day, Lane Lambert is gone and Patrick Waugh is in. And your new head coach is the greatest goalie of all time. Certainly the greatest living goalie. He walks in the door, immediate respect, immediate presence, immediate. I mean, that is throwing a plugged-in toaster into the bathtub. That is a shock to the system of that entire team. My God, this is a big move. This is not replacing him with Dean Evason or another former head coach. You know, we've decided to fire him and we're going to hire. I can't even remember. I can't even think of another former head coach that's kind of a not a big name. Todd Richards. We've brought in Todd Richards. No, this is not that. This is Patrick Waugh is your new head coach. And my goodness, what a presence that would be for the New York Islanders. And I love the move. As soon as I heard it, I loved the move. I thought this is because Patrick Waugh has always been a no-nonsense kind of guy to bring in. You remember when he won the Coach of the Year, he was trying to crush Bruce Boudreau under the glass between the two benches. They were having a fight. He's a fiery guy. He's a good coach that has had success in the NHL, but demands immediate respect. And I'm not saying other coaches don't. I'm not saying if they had hired Dallas Eakins, he wouldn't demand immediate respect. But he's not the greatest goalie of all time. So that's I love this move. And you mentioned, you know, Rob Blake may want to take a page out of Lou Lamoriello's. Lou Lamoriello does this all the time. He is quick to fire coaches. When he was with New Jersey, he was in first place and he fired his coach anyway at the end of the season and ended up winning
Claude
the Stanley
Julien,
Cup.
Right? Claude Julien.
Yeah, and hired Larry Robinson, I believe. But anyway, he will do this.
You can go back and listen to
how
you can go back and listen to our reaction on that move.
I know. It's amazing. It is amazing.
I did not expect a Todd Richards reference, by the way. My God, what a generic name and generic former NHL head coach.
Goodness. I saw your face and I saw you look him up. Like, is that even a former coach?
Yep.
He is though, right? The Minnesota Wild?
Yeah, and the Columbus Blue Jackets for many years as well.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. That's not hiring him, which would be a perfectly valid hire. He's a former NHL head coach. But I'm just saying, I love this move. If I was an Islanders fan, I would be so fired up to see this guy come in and be my head coach. This is what this team needs. He gives them an identity. He gives them a personality. And I love this. Love it.
Well, Patrick Waugh is back. So is Corey Perry. As we look at the signings and roster moves from this past week, he's been given a second chance to resume his NHL career, the 38-year-old signing with the Edmonton Oilers. It is a one-year deal for the league minimum. It includes performance bonuses. Perry, former league MVP at one time, released by the Blackhawks in November following what was described as an alcohol-fueled incident that included Blackhawks employees and corporate sponsors. Perry subsequently sought help for substance abuse. 17-year veteran has won a Stanley Cup and has played in three other Stanley Cup finals. So obviously what the Oilers are looking for, some playoff experience, a little grit, and a guy who certainly can put in a goal occasionally here and there. But there you go. Corey Perry back with the Edmonton Oilers.
He's a playoff performer is what the guy is, and that's what they're signing him for. He's not there to light up the scoreboard, but he's going to do well in the playoffs. You go back to the Dallas Stars run. He was a good player for them. You go back to the Montreal Canadiens run to the Stanley Cup final. He had 10 points in 22 games, was a physical presence for them. And these are playing less than 14 minutes a night, by the way. In the Lightning run where he lost, he had 11 points in 23 playoff games. In the Lightning's run the next year, he had 5 points in 6 playoff games. So this is a guy that can get the job done in the playoffs as a net front presence, a power play presence on if need be. But it's a great signing for the Edmonton Oilers because he is such a skilled player. And look, how his career ended in Chicago, alcohol-fueled incident. From what we can tell, just again, putting two and two together, was overserved and was out of control at some point and embarrassed himself, embarrassed the organization, did something. Never faced criminal charges, never got suspended by the league, but was released. Never said he was unjustly released, never said this was unfair. This is, I've been framed, none of that. Apparently took some time off to get himself situated, get himself right, and is ready to go. I think this is a great signing for Edmonton. Obviously, I'm biased because he's a legend with the Anaheim Ducks. He's a future Hall of Famer, but he's won at every level. He's a winner. He knows how to win. He's still got some game left, and I love this signing for Edmonton.
Yeah, and my personal thoughts were just when I couldn't hate the Oilers more. they had that guy.
Yep.
Washington Capitals signed forward Alexei Protas, 5-year contract extension. 23-year-old will get $3.37 million per year, total of $16.8 million is the contract. He'll be under contract through 2028-29. He was a third-round pick of the team in 2019. 3 goals, 18 points in 42 games this season.
This is one of those, you mentioned the Igor Zulov. Or what?
Zamula. How soon we forget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned him as a guy that you're like, wait, who?
Yeah.
When I saw the contract, I got to say, I'm like, I've heard the name.
Barely.
I did not think this was a dude you're willing to commit 5 years and $17 million to.
Agreed. Agreed.
I was very surprised by the term of this deal. Washington knows him better. I don't watch the Capitals on a regular basis. So Capitals fans, write in and let us know what you think about this deal. Feedback at puckpodcast.com. This could end up being a bargain 3 years from now, for all I know. But I was just very surprised. I'm like, he got how much? For how long? Oh, okay.
Ottawa Senators signed forward Shane Pinto, 1 year, $775,000 after he returned, it was right before he returned from his 41-game suspension of violating the league's sports wagering rules. He became the first NHL player in the modern era to receive a gambling-related suspension when he was handed down the half-season ban in October. No details were given on exactly the circumstances surrounding Pinto's wagering, and he did not clarify when speaking to reporters last week in Ottawa, but he did get a goal this week, back in action after 280 days out of the NHL.
If I was Shane Pinto, and he probably wants no part of this because he wants to put this past him, but if I was Shane Pinto and I scored a goal,
this is going to be good.
I would go over to the ads on the board for FanDuel or DraftKings and give it a little tap, you know, little reminder of pizza. I'm a good bet to score tonight, fans, or something like that. And during the 41 game suspension, I would ask them, can I do some advertising for you? Because I need the money. You could pay me in credits.
I can tell you from personal experience. This parlay is going to hit.
Yeah, I'm Shane Pinto, and you know,
you can
when I say, yeah, when I say I recommend FanDuel, I recommend FanDuel. You can take that to the bank. Yeah, you could bet on it. That would have been great.
The aforementioned Jason Dickerson gets a 2-year extension with the Chicago Blackhawks, $4.25 million. And Carolina claimed goaltender Spencer Martin off waivers from the Columbus Blue Jackets. ER report, Minnesota Wild captain and defenseman Jared Spurgeon done for the season. He is scheduled to have left hip surgery February 6th and then will have back surgery 4 weeks later. The expectation for Spurgeon is that he will be fully recovered from his surgeries in time for training camp next September. But my Lord, we can rebuild him. We have right. The technology. We have the tools.
And he's not young.
It's from an old TV show for you younger folks. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Wow.
If you get that reference.
It's time for your colonoscopy, yes.
Yes. No, it's a he's not a young man. And I would think he's the captain, by the way, of the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, that's a significant loss for sure.
Yeah, and but it's not a guarantee he's going to come back and be a viable NHL player.
Well, hopefully.
You know. Hip and back surgery?
That's tough, man.
Yeah.
His wife, if he's married, is going to have a lot of duties around the house. Better hire a maid and a housekeeper and nanny.
I was going to say his wife. Let me take a look real quick at his contract. He's going to have helpers.
Yeah.
His wife ain't going to have to do a damn thing. All She's right. not getting him in and out of bed. Let's see. Yeah. Minnesota Wild.
You're having what? Well, you better hire somebody to help me out here.
This is right. Oh yeah. This is, he is making over $7 million a year. She won't lift a finger.
All right.
Hey, while you're getting him his meal, would you get me some fruit basket, fruit plate or something? A charcuterie board? Thank you.
Let's get to the Law and Order report. Florida Panthers forward William Lockwood. That's another name that I don't know. I'm not real familiar with. But he got a 3-game suspension by the NHL for goalie interference. He was punished for for contact with goalie Marc-Andre Fleury in a game against the Wild. He was assessed a minor penalty for goalie interference. Shortly afterwards, he was in a fight with Brandon Duhame of the Wild and got knocked the F out for his contact there with Marc-Andre Fleury, which I thought actually wasn't all that terrible. But anyway, Fleury ended up leaving the game midway through the second period with an upper body injury. I don't know if the two are related, but the NHL giving William Lockwood a 3-game suspension for that contact. And we also had Seattle Kraken forward Yanni Gord getting suspended for 2 games. He was assessed a major penalty for charging against the Oilers' Matthias Ekholm. Gord left his feet to deliver a high hit to Ekholm. He then took on most of the Oilers' team after that. Gord had been suspended once in his NHL career. I don't believe that Mr. Lockwood had ever been suspended before.
I don't think so.
So a 2-game suspension for Yanni Gord.
Lockwood's former guy for the Canucks. He's never been a big regular player, but you know he's had an NHL career. The NHL video announcing the suspension said that he should have made a greater effort to slow down and not hit him in the head. I don't think he intended to do that.
It was one of those things where
he's Fleury going hard to the net.
He went behind the puck to play. He went behind the net to play the puck, and he tried to do kind of a flyby. I think he didn't. I don't think he really wanted to hit him, but there was contact. I mean, I don't have a problem calling a penalty, but I don't 3-game suspension.
It was ridiculous because he's a fringe NHL player that can't take shifts off. He has to go 100% every shift in order to keep his job. And so he's going as hard as he can on the forecheck to try and force a turnover, get a loose puck, create some offense. I don't believe for a second he went in there with the intention of hitting Marc-Andre Fleury. And this is another example of the NHL punishing the result and not the act itself. And I hate that. You can go back many years on this show and hear me belly aching about punishing results. Oh, Fleury's hurt. We got to suspend him. It's stupid.
Yeah, Marc-Andre Fleury didn't leave after that contact. He left later in the game. So I don't know that it was connected. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But I will say this. William Lockwood, I think, was on the worst end of this because he got – and he was a willing participant. He dropped the gloves right away with Brandon Duhame, but he was out on his feet and went down hard after taking a right hand to the face. So
I will say, yeah. And that's probably, why he's, I mean, other than the financial aspect of it and having it on your record, he's probably okay with it because he probably wouldn't have played in a few games anyway,
yeah,
due to concussion protocol. Like, let me get the cobwebs cleared here before I get back out there. And oh, I get a week off. Okay.
Yeah. The Yanni Gourde thing, I think part of the thing for his suspension was that he was clearly looking for some blood after he was getting into it with Connor McDavid. There was some slashing going on. He was hot and he said, I'm taking it out on this guy. And he did. So I get that one. I understand that one there.
No, and that's the one that you're not, that's actually a legitimate suspension in my opinion, because again, he went in with bad intentions.
Right. And he left his feet and
Exactly. And his coach, Dave Haxtell, was complaining that he had taken some cross checks earlier. Okay. You still can't do that. That's still not the retaliation. You go and complain to the refs. You slash somebody. You don't go up high. You don't leave your feet to deliver a hit.
One more Law and Order note from off the ice, a pretrial hearing. In a pretrial hearing, Milan Lucic's attorney requested a bench trial, waiving the client's right to a jury trial. Judge set a trial date for February 16th. Lucic is free on bail. Of course, this all stems from an incident in November when he was arrested for assault and battery on an intimate partner, which is the way the law says it, which is his wife. He has pleaded not guilty to the charges and is on an indefinite leave of absence from the Boston Bruins. A couple of random shots before we close things out here. A couple of front office moves of note. The New Jersey Devils signed GM Tom Fitzgerald to a multi-year extension. He also is given the additional title of president of hockey operations. Devils have been one of the rising teams, most improved teams over the NHL since he took over for Ray Shiro back in 2020. Fitzgerald got the full-time GM job that summer, oversaw the drafting of Luke Hughes, Dawson Mercer, among others. The Devils' job is Fitzgerald's first job as a general manager in the NHL, so going well for him. And the Vancouver Canucks have given Hall of Famer Jim Rutherford a three-year extension to remain in his role as president of hockey operations. Under Rutherford, he hired Patrick Alvin, the general manager, eventually hired Rick Tocchet as the head coach. And, of course, the Canucks are doing very, very well this year. Rutherford was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2019 in the Builders category, then was hired by the Canucks in 2020. He was with the Penguins, won a couple of Stanley Cups, and also was GM of the Carolina Hurricanes for a Stanley Cup as well. Vincent Trocheck of the Rangers, Kyle Connor of the Jets have been added to the NHL All-Star Game as injury replacements for Jack Eichel and Connor Bedard. And the Smith Entertainment Group, owners of the NBA's Utah Jazz, have asked the NHL to initiate an expansion process to try and bring an NHL team to Salt Lake City, Utah. You go to Utah, you stay in Utah.
You think we've talked about expansion. It's a terrible idea.
Yeah, it's going to happen. And it's going to happen.
Because they can make money, and that's literally all they care about. Is Salt Lake a team you think? If there's going to be two expansion teams, let's say they're going to expand one east, one west to keep it balanced. What two cities would you like to see, Eddie?
Houston would be at the top of the list for me. I think maybe Portland. Nashville, I think, would be in there. I guess
Nashville.
That's a question. Or, sorry, not Nashville. Nashville needs two teams. What are you talking about? I don't know that Salt Lake City would be real high on the list. Maybe Kansas City, but... if they have the interest, and they certainly have the arena, which is always a huge part of this, right?
It's now old though.
Well, I mean,
you're talking Utah or Kansas City?
Utah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought you meant Kansas City. I thought that. Remember that arena was brand new, and that's why it was a draw. It's not brand new anymore.
No, true, true.
Which team is the east of those? You said Houston and Portland, maybe Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you'd have to throw Quebec City in there.
Yep. I'm going to throw a team at you.
I don't want to see any expansion, frankly. But
No. But as we said, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
These guys, all they care about is making money. The sport is secondary. I'd like to see Milwaukee get a team. I think that would be a great sports market for hockey. It's I think it's a it's part of the culture up there, and would I think it would do immediately very well. As for and that would be the East team, in my opinion. As for the West, Portland has a good hockey culture from the minors in the WHL. I don't know how much of an appetite there is for NHL hockey there, but I'd like to see it. Houston, obviously, it's a humongous market, media market, and having two teams in Dallas would be something.
I guess I guess for the East, you'd have to throw out Atlanta, right? They keep bringing Atlanta
would be one for media market and corporations. And then I also like New Orleans. I still like the idea of a team in New Orleans. I think it would be cool. They've got NFL, they've got NBA. They are a major sports market, and I think it would be cool to have down there. But again, I don't know the demand for hockey down there.
Top of the second period here on the Puck Podcast, and our guest this week is the co-host of this show. He also is the host of Locked On LA Kings. His name is Eddie Garcia. You can follow him on Twitter at Eddie on Fox, and he's joining us to talk about the LA Kings. All right. I asked Doug if that was lame or not. He said it was not lame. So I am the special guest of the Puck Podcast this week. And it wasn't because I couldn't get a guest. I just kind of looked at the teams we've talked about so far this year and who are some of the teams that I thought would be interesting to talk about. And I thought, well, I think the LA Kings would be an interesting team. And Doug didn't have time to actually do the interview with me, but he did give me 8 questions to answer. I have not looked at these, so we'll see what he has to say. But yeah, I thought, well, I'm pretty confident in my abilities to talk about the LA Kings. So I hope that if you don't watch or listen to Locked On LA Kings podcast and YouTube channel, which you absolutely should, but if you don't, talking about the LA Kings will be something a little different, I guess, at least to this involvement, this depth. All right. So Doug has supplied the questions. Number one question for me is, who are the Kings, the team we saw for the first 20 games or the team we have seen the last 20 games? And if you haven't been paying close attention to the LA Kings, the Kings were terrific over the first 20 games. At one point, were considered one of the top teams in the NHL. And the last 20 games, particularly since we've turned the calendar to 2024, have not been good at all. And they've, as a result, lost their hold on third place in the Pacific, as we talked about in the first period, and are now a wildcard team. To answer the question, I would, if I had to pick one or the other, because the answer could be maybe it's something in between. As a matter of fact, that's probably the most likely answer, to be honest with you. But if I had to pick one or the other, I would say the Kings are more like the team we saw in the first 20 games than the last 20 games. Right now, they're finding ways to lose. Right now, they're not getting any breaks. They're still playing hard. They're still competing night in and night out. They're losing a lot of close games. They've been terrible in the shootout for some reason. They weren't bad last year, but they have not been good this year. So I would expect if they just keep doing what they're doing and get a few breaks here and there, have a couple players kind of get out of slumps here and there, I think they'll be back a lot more to what we saw earlier in the year than what we're seeing now. So if I had to pick between the first 20 games or the last 20 games, I would say that the Kings ultimately will be more like the team we saw for the first 20 games. Question number 2, who has surprised you so far this season? I would have to say Trevor Moore has been a big surprise for the LA Kings. He is currently leading the team in goals with 21. It's a career high for him, which he's already eclipsed before the All-Star break. So he's gone from being a solid role player and occasional scorer to being a legitimate, like, top line level scorer. He's playing on the second line, but he has really broken out. And in a lot of his goals, it's not like one of those situations where everything he shoots is going in or it's going off legs and he's getting a lot of puck luck. He's scoring high quality goals as far as the skill he's showing to score these goals. Perfectly placed up in the top corner, scoring goals without a lot of room or space and making a move with his hands to get a goalie down and then put the high skilled goals for Trevor Moore. If you're not familiar with him, he is a Southern California native. He's from Thousand Oaks, California. He was originally drafted by the Toronto Maple Leafs and came to LA in the Jake Muzzin trade. So that is a deal that's definitely worked out very, very well for the LA Kings. I would say Quentin Byfield has been a surprise as well. Not that ultimately I didn't think he would be a very good player, but I didn't know that it would be this year. He became kind of a full-time NHL player last year, and showed some strides as far as things not showing up in the on the score sheet. But this year he's putting it together with that and getting goals as well. He's already blowing away his career high. He's got 14 goals already. He's got 33 points already. Those are by far career highs. So he has really blossomed this year. And it's probably been, if I could pick one thing that's been my favorite part of the LA Kings this year, it would be Quentin Byfield really showing that he is going to turn into a player that was worthy of him being the second overall pick in the NHL draft. I think he's still going to get a lot better than where he is now. He's a tall, gangly kind of a kid. He's starting to kind of fill into his body. I think he's still going to get bigger and stronger. And he flies around the ice. For a guy that tall and that size, he really is active as far as where he is and kind of where he goes on the ice. Anyone else of a surprise for the Kings? I mean, it's a surprise how well Cam Talbot played in the first half of the season, but we'll get to that question in a moment. What's been the biggest disappointment for the Kings? That's a pretty easy answer. It's been Pierre-Luc Dubois. The big offseason acquisition was supposed to be kind of the difference maker for the Kings this year. He's been pretty much along for the ride. He's centering the third line. So I think, to be fair to him, he has not gotten, obviously, the minutes he's used to. And he's played with, for the most part, a rookie on one wing, Alex Laferriere, and kind of a rotating door on the other wing, with guys like currently a guy named Jared Anderson Dolan, who is just kind of a role player. Arthur Kaliev has been there a little bit. But he just has not had any kind of supporting cast, and he has not shown the ability to kind of do it all on his own. So, on the season, 9 goals, 19 points is certainly, for a third line center, it's not terrible. But for what they expected and what they gave up to get him and what they're paying him, it is a disappointment. He's a minus 13 on the season. That is by far the worst on the team, and it's not even close. And the optics don't help him either. He's kind of a lumbering, kind of a coasting kind of a guy. It's probably not quite as bad as it looks, but when you consider new player in a new place, you want to make a good impression. It has not been there so far for Pierre-Luc Dubois. I we're going to talk about somebody else coming up, and I'll save it for another question because I know it's coming up, but he's been the biggest disappointment, no doubt. Number 4 question from Doug. You've said on Locked On LA Kings, you believe it's time for a coaching change, but GM Rob Blake has given head coach Tom McClellan his support. Why do you think a coaching change is needed? I mean, it's pretty basic. Right now, the team is just a little bit off, and he hasn't really shown the ability to be able to make the adjustments in the lineup or the adjustments to the strategy to kind of offset them being just a little bit off. I think he's a good coach. I think he's probably a really good coach as far as getting a bad team to be competitive to good. I don't know that he's the guy that takes the team from good to great. He's never taken a team to the Stanley Cup final in many, many years in San Jose and Edmonton. And he's a good coach. I don't think he's a great coach. So what are we really losing if we decide to make a coaching change? I don't think it's that much, to be honest with you. It's not like this is an all-time winningest coach in franchise history. It's not like this is a guy who's won multiple Stanley Cups, so you give him the benefit of the doubt. He's just kind of a middle-of-the-road coach to me. And there are other guys out there that I think could come in and do a better job. My top candidate would be Craig Berube, who's literally done what the Kings would be asking him to do if they brought him in. He took over a St. Louis team that was struggling, got them to the Stanley Cup final, and won it the same year. He's a no-nonsense coach. He'll come in and kick some butts, and I think that's the kind of coach the Kings need right now. So you put it all together, a team that is struggling, a coach that isn't irreplaceable, and a good candidate that is available, and put it all together, and I think I don't know why the move hasn't been made. Should have been made already. Question number 5, do you believe the goalie tandem of David Rittich and Cam Talbot's good enough to get the Kings to the Stanley Cup final? I think the Kings are good enough to get to the final with them. Certainly they won't be going to the final because of them, but we saw with the Vegas Golden Knights, get good enough goaltending and have a team play really well around them, and you can win a Stanley Cup or get to a Stanley Cup final. So I think those two guys are good enough to get the Kings where they ultimately want to go if the team around them is playing at the level they're capable of playing. Number six, the Kings have been eliminated by the Oilers 2 years in a row. If they meet again this year, do you believe the Kings have what it takes to get past them? Well, at the moment, no, because the Oilers right now are the greatest team in the history of hockey earth, and the Kings aren't. So at the moment, no. But obviously, as we talked about in the first period, what happens now is not necessarily what happens at the end of the year. We talked about the winning streaks for teams and how they've fared ultimately, and it's not great. So currently, no. But like I said, it's likely both teams will not exactly be the teams they are right now at the end of the year. Although I don't see them meeting in the first round of the playoffs, because I think Edmonton's definitely going to finish second or third in the Pacific, and the Kings, I don't see catching Vegas or Edmonton to be one of the top two teams in the Pacific, top three teams in the Pacific, because I think Vancouver is pretty much going to run away with it, even if the Oilers continue on this ridiculous streak. Vancouver's been playing great hockey as well. So the Kings are going to be a wild card team, and so they'll probably have to face Colorado or Winnipeg or Vancouver in the first round. Anyway, we'll see. But I would say at the moment, no, but who knows what will happen at the end of the year. Question number seven, what moves would you like to see the Kings make before the trade deadline? Well, they're not going to make any moves before the trade deadline because they can't. They are, unless somebody gets seriously injured and goes on long-term injured reserve, they've got no cap space to make any moves. So, but there is an addition they will be making, if things go well. Shortly, we're told after the All-Star break, Victor Arvidsson will be rejoining the team. He had back surgery. He's been out for months. He's been a key piece that's been missing, and he will be like their trade deadline pickup. I would anticipate him playing on the third line with Pierre-Luc Dubois, which would give Dubois a legitimate scoring threat to be able to team up with, which should help him. And Victor Arvidsson will definitely help the Kings' power play as well as a right-handed shot. They've got all left shots right now, which has been an issue for them. So they're not going to do anything at the deadline, but they are going to add Victor Arvidsson if everything goes on his recovery the way we've been told it's going, everything going well so far. So that will be the Kings' trade deadline addition, and that's a good addition. And the final question from Doug Stolhan to me, Eddie Garcia, the host of Locked On LA Kings. What's your prediction for how the season ends for LA? I do think they're a playoff team. I do think at some point they're going to get things figured out and be at least a good enough team to get into the playoffs. I don't see them being in the top three in the Pacific because Vancouver, Vegas, and Edmonton are too good for them to make up that kind of ground. But I do think when you look at the teams they're competing with for a wild card spot, Nashville, St. Louis, Calgary, Arizona, Seattle, I think even with some of the warts the Kings have right now, I think they're still as good, if not better, than any of those teams. So I will be shocked if they're not a wild card team. And again, the coaching change might come, and that could help them get going as well. So I think the Kings are a wild card team. And then, you know, they'll match up, like I said, against one of those top teams. But that's worked out well for the Kings in the past. They were in 2012. They were a wildcard team, the eighth seed. They upset the Vancouver Canucks in the first round. They were the President's Trophy winner, and they went all the way and won the Stanley Cup. So maybe being a wildcard team for the Kings isn't the worst thing in the world. How do I think the season ends? It's really hard to predict right now. I guess if I was betting money on it, I would say the Kings probably lose again in the first round as a wildcard team to a really good team, but hopefully I'm wrong. But we'll see how it goes. So there you have it. There is a look at the Los Angeles Kings. Hopefully you enjoyed that. And if you really, really enjoyed it, maybe you will subscribe and listen to and watch Locked On LA Kings wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube. Time for the third and final period here on the Puck Podcast. And before we get into your emails this week, we do want to thank all of our supporters on Patreon. We do have an email regarding Patreon, which is coming up in just a moment. But do want to thank our friend Dave over at Tally Hockey Jerseys. Go to tallycustomhockeyjerseys.com to get your Puck Podcast merchandise. And we do have a do have somebody who bought a Puck Podcast jersey. Did you see the? Did you see this on social media, Doug? Adrian Alston. He is of the True Kings of the Queen City podcast, and he apparently is a fan of the show, and he purchased a black Puck Podcast jersey with Big Panda on the back and the number 55.
Interesting.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the Queen City? I think there's probably more than one Queen City, but there's one Queen City I think that I'm familiar with in the United
Baltimore.
States. No, I think it's Cincinnati.
Let's find out. Let's go to the internet.
But thank you, Adrian. Big Panda, for your purchase of a gorgeous black Puck Podcast jersey. And you can get your own by visiting our friend Dave over at tallycustomhockeyjerseys.com. Go to the Puck Podcast team store. You can get jerseys, hats, all kinds of good stuff. And so appreciate Big Panda supporting the show there. Thank you.
It says here Charlotte goes by the name of Queen City.
Okay.
Also Cincinnati, you are correct. Let's see. They had apparently the Charlotte and the Panthers, Carolina Panthers, and the Cincinnati Bengals played, and it was dubbed the Queen City Bowl back in 2014.
All right.
Let's see. I don't know what either nickname
was there. Was there a Queen Charlotte back in the day?
There was.
Okay, that makes sense. Cincinnati, though, I don't know. I don't know where that comes in.
Their claim goes to an 1819 newspaper article that called Cincinnati the Queen of the West, back when that was considered the West.
Yeah. It's like the Michigan fight song has champions of the West in the lyrics.
It also had the nickname around that time, Porkopolis, because it was a large pork packing center.
Well, they should change the name to Porkopolis. Yeah. I mean, come on. The Porkopolis Bengals just flows. And I get to mention thank you to all of our friends over on Patreon, patreon.com/puckpodcast. If you would like to be one of the few, the proud, the generous patrons on Patreon, it is patreon.com/puckpodcast.
And thank you to Adrian for buying that jersey. And
yeah,
did he post a picture of it?
He did. I retweeted it. No, I can't say that anymore. Reposted it on our on the Puck Podcast page.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice.
Looks good on you. Let's get into the emails. Doug, why don't you lead us off?
Oh, looks good on you, though. The first email comes from Pat. He's in Hobart, Tasmania.
Yeah.
He says, hello, gents, and hello to the Puck Podcast community. Pat from Hobart, Tasmania, checking in with a series of unconnected thoughts, mostly about hockey. I wonder if he gets that reference. Are you familiar with the character It's Pat?
Here Comes Pat. Was that what it was? Is that how the song went? It's time for androgyny. Here comes Pat or something like that.
Yeah. They made a movie out of that character.
Oh, sweet Jesus. That was a bad idea.
That is a character that is hard to explain to today's sensitivities.
Oh yes.
I might have to go back and watch some of those skits from Saturday Night Live. Julia Sweeney as Pat, the androgynous.
You weren't sure.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So anyway.
Let's move on.
Pat continues. Halfway through the season, things I was wrong about. Number one, Boston was going to fall off. Well, I'm not alone here, but it's unreal how they've managed to maintain this level. Number two, Huberto would find his game after a down season. Yeesh. I thought for sure a new team and systems were the reason for the down year. Instead, he's on pace for roughly 12 goals and 34 assists. All that at $10.5 million with a no movement clause until after the 2031 season. Oh, lordy. He's 30 years old right now. This is a contract or a candidate for the worst contract in the league, Seth Jones being another candidate. Any candidates from the two of you for worst contract in the league? It is still Mark Edward Vlasic. That is still the worst contract in the league, in my opinion. I don't know if Eddie has one. We'll get to him at the end of the email. Number three things he was wrong about. The Sabres and Senators were ahead of the Red Wings in the hunt for the playoffs. I mean, Yzerman said so himself in the offseason. Now, there's still a lot of season to go, and due to the talent in the Atlantic, I still think my Wings will fall short of the playoffs, but I really expected those other two to be a lot better. There's still a lot of season to go, so maybe I'll be wrong about being wrong. Speaking of the Senators about being halfway through the season, could one of you explain to me the following? If Shane Pinto was not under contract at the start of the season, how could he serve a suspension? It's a very good point. Couple of other thoughts. I'm sorry Connor Bedard got hurt, but I'm with pretty much everyone in thinking the hit was clean. In fact, I think Brendan Smith showed considerable restraint. Watching it back, it looked like Smith could have absolutely blown Bedard up. Yeah, he could have put the old Brian Campbell hit on RJ Umberger on him and left him frozen in carbonite if he wanted to. He did not, and he still suffered a broken jaw. I enjoyed your discussion at the end of the last episode comparing Zetterberg and Taves' careers and whether they would be Hall of Famers. As you have both said in the past, it's the Hockey Hall of Fame, not the NHL Hall of Fame. One thing you didn't mention, which both players have as career achievements, both are members of the Triple Gold Club. For those who don't know, the Triple Gold is the group of ice hockey players and coaches who have won an Olympic gold, a World Championship gold, and the Stanley Cup. There are only 30 players who have achieved this. Thanks for all the continued excellence on the podcast. It's my favorite podcast of all time. But wait, I said at the start of the email that it was mostly about hockey, and yet it's been all about hockey. So I'll leave you and the listeners with the following. Let's fornicating go Lions. Kind regard, Pat from Hobart, Tasmania.
Hear, hear.
Everybody that is not a 49ers fan is rooting for the Detroit Lions, but I can tell you from watching my Patriots dominate the NHL for 20 years and go to multiple Super Bowls and be in many conference championships, I've seen this movie before. The Lions have hit their ceiling. They will not win this weekend. I am reminded of so many teams like the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2006 that made it to the conference championship. Everybody was rooting for them because they hated the Patriots. And it's just like that next step is one too far. And I believe me, I'm rooting for you though, Pat. I would love to see it. Martha Ford has been the owner of the Detroit Lions for a long time. She's 95 years old, I believe. She is waiting. We had an interview with her years ago for the NFL. And she said, they asked her what her favorite moment was as owner. And she said, it hasn't happened yet because I'm waiting for us to win the Lombardi Trophy. God, I hope they win it for her this year. That would be a fantastic moment. So I am rooting like hell for your Lions.
Yeah, same here. Same here. I'm definitely rooting for the Lions. They're a good story and never even been in a Super Bowl for much less won it. So
yeah, but
and they're an original NFL franchise anyway.
I think Shane Pinto would tell you, bet on the 49ers. Yeah.
Just real quick. Worst contract
in the NHL, Eddie.
I would agree with you, that it's Mark Edward Vlasic. I missed apparently a story. I just happened to scroll by something. The Blackhawks signed goalie Peter Mrazek, 2 years, $8.5 million. So just wanted to throw that out.
Yeah. You don't want to lose him.
Yes. Our next email comes from Jeff. Oh, no, he doesn't. It's not Jeff. I'm sorry. It's Terry. I got distracted because he said, hey, Doug, Eddie, and possibly Jeff, because Jeff did join us for the emails last week, which was nice. And he's going to next week. Is that right? Is he going to have to?
Yes, correct.
Or it's just me. I don't know. I mean, I
a
have
week
no
from
idea.
Now, yes.
I have no idea what Jeff's schedule is. But Doug will not be a part of the emails next week. So I actually should make you read all the emails this week. I think that would be fair. But anyway, this comes from Tyler. He says, I figured I would take a second and share some information about team branding for the newly established Professional Women's Hockey League. Instead of taking the best names from the remnants of the rubble from other defunct organizations, the PWHL decided it would be best to leave all of that in the past and begin anew. Back in October of last year, the league registered teams' names, possibly, respective names with the United States Patent Office, United States Patent and Trademark Office. They were met with heavy criticism and therefore postponed. They have since stated that they will be playing under the league brand while they sort out or perfect each team's identity. It looks like the league saw that Washington and Cleveland went through for decades that they can go through in year one before unveiling the official team names. If you haven't heard the trademark names, I have those for you here. I have no idea if this is a serious or a funny email, by the way. But he says these are the names they tried to register with the United States Patent and Trademark Office, which is interesting because some of these teams are not in the United States. So, again, I don't know if he's being funny or not. He says the Boston Wicked, The Minnesota
of the Salem witch trials back in the day.
The Minnesota Superior.
The lake. I get the that.
The Montreal Echo.
What was it?
At the Montreal Echo.
One more time.
The New York Sound.
I didn't hear you.
The Ottawa Alert and the Toronto Torch. That's what he claims that they have.
Do you like any of those?
No. No, I don't. he says, now as a Kraken fan and an Avalanche fan before that, I could certainly get behind the collective or the irregular pluralities for these team names. That being said, I don't know how you could pull a logo or a mascot off of some of these. Doug, your New Orleans voodoo would fit right in. Fun fact, New York's fans have been calling their team the Pizza Rats.
Oh, boy.
No word if that will stick.
It will not stick.
I'm going to go no on that one. But I do like it better than, what was theirs? The Sound. The New York Sound? Anyway, he says, as much as the trademark names have been bashed, I would say justified. So the PWHL has seemingly knocked it out of the park with the colors for the inaugural six franchises. They are, from the press release, Boston is forest green, gray, and white. Minnesota, purple, black, and white. Montreal's burgundy, storm, and sand. Oh, my
God. What color is storm?
I have no idea. New York is turquoise, navy, blue, and white. Ottawa, red, storm as well, and white. And Toronto is blue, black, and white. Anyway, I wanted to share that with the community as I apparently this is a serious email. I wanted to he said it was interesting to try and follow the birth of a new league. The USFL XFL merger has my interest thoroughly piqued as well. Not me. Anyway, as always,
that was you saying that.
Yes,
me.
Yes, that was. I'm pissed off that the USFL has gotten rid of half its teams to join this United Football League.
Hey, says, everybody, speaking of Alert, the Ottawa Alert, we found the guy that's upset about the USFL merger. It's Eddie Garcia.
Screw you. as always, thank you for everything you do. I'll be looking into the Puck Podcast Patreon. Well, thank you. Next month marks the 10th year of me listening to you fine gents. You've given me so much content over the past decade, and I would love to show my appreciation. I bought a jersey a few years ago.
Nice.
And that is from Terry White. Now, excuse me, Tyler. I'm sorry, Tyler White. Tyler White. He is in Marietta, Georgia. I know a Terry White, so sorry about that. Thank you, Tyler, for the jersey and for looking into the Patreon. He says, P.S., with all the rumors of the team back in Atlanta, I've been working on an email about relocation expansion in the NHL. If you would like me to hold off until the offseason to send it, please let me know. It could be a source of discussion. I think that's a great idea. I absolutely think that would
put a pin in that, Terry or Tyler. Terry
White. You did it too.
I was gonna say Terry White is the color that should have been Montreal's color instead of Storm.
Yeah.
Screwed up my own joke.
Did you look up Storm and see what color that is?
No, I don't care.
I don't either.
That's a dumb name for a color.
To me, it's all those colors are it's blue, it's green, it's red, it's not whatever.
Right.
Screw you.
I get when you want to get into discrepancies between shades of green. I get that. Forest green, Kelly green. I get that. But storm? I can't even imagine what that would look like because a storm has a variety of colors. So that's a weird one for me. As for the names, I don't know about that.
I mean, I appreciate them trying to be unique and not just going, some stupid like Wildcats and Lions or, those really generic dumb ones.
But let me throw one out for you, though. And this comes from the world of Jim Gaffigan.
Oh, I like Jim Gaffigan.
One of those teams should name themselves Bacon because everybody loves bacon.
Damn right. Unless you're Jewish, I guess. But
well, even so, he's like, you can't tell me that that's not part of the reason Kevin Bacon's had such a great career. Who's in this? Kevin Bacon? Sounds good.
God, I do love bacon.
The Boston Bacon.
I love them.
I don't know what's going, but I'm buying a ticket. Yeah,
everything's better with bacon.
That's right. Our next email comes from our friend Dave Taylor. He says, hey, guys, we too have Valley Fever over here in Phoenix, and it is nothing to joke around with. One of our neighbors was hit with it right before COVID, and she almost passed away. Good Lord.
Wow,
We also have a desert mice here, and they can be so destructive. Just as Doug said, once they get in the house, it's a death match. We had to get them in. We had them get into my wife's car, and they caused a whole bunch of wire damage that cost around $600 to fix. Our neighbors, who are winter visitors, came back in November after being gone for 5 months, came to a whole nest in his car. Thankfully, it did not cause a lot of damage, but he spent several days taking things apart to clean out the nest. Messy, messy. I once had a nest of mice in my car.
You and did? It was
in the wheel well.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's a warm spot for them. And I was like, but I drive this car. So what are they in the car with me as I'm driving to and from work? I was baffled. Dave continues. I agree on the so generic All-Star jerseys this year. Dave Italy hockey jerseys would have done so much better. They should have contacted him. I too have very little interest in the game itself and will catch the highlights of the skills competition. A thought. If the NHL were to pick the All-Stars at the end of each season and then had a game at the end of the next preseason leading into the regular season, would that create more interest? I like that idea.
Yeah. It couldn't hurt. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, 100%. 100% it could not hurt. And it would get people watching the game as opposed to this. I think a lot of people are taking this as a break from the NHL action. But I like that idea. It's kind of like the idea we heard about the bowl games that are not the playoffs should be played as the first game of the following season.
Yeah.
Which is a great idea.
I agree with that completely.
Anyway, he continues.
Yes.
Finally, I just don't get the NHL's draft policies. It seems crazy that a player can sign with a team and then spend several years in college and then ditch the team that signed him. That's one thing you cannot do that. You cannot sign with the team. You can be drafted by the team and then play years in college, ditch them and sign with somebody else. If I recall correctly, says Dave, in the other major U.S. leagues, a player that chooses to be a part of the pro draft forfeits any college term remaining, and some of the best go straight to the pros. Now, I know the NHL is a bit different with the path to the pros being much less defined, but it still seems crazy to me that you can be drafted into the NHL and not play for them for years. Anyway, carry on, Dave Taylor. Dave, it is been a long problem for Eddie and me to wrap our heads around why the draft is the way it is in the NHL. Every NHL team has an AHL affiliate. Every NHL team has an ECHL affiliate. Those are where you should go once you get drafted. You are a player on that team, and you should develop your career on one of those two teams, not in college, not in Europe, not in juniors. It seems crazy that the NHL continues to allow this and has no say in the development of the players they've drafted and have invested their future in. So I think it would create much more interest in the ECHL. Certainly, if I saw a guy that I know just got drafted and was playing at that level, smaller rink, fun to go see him play, and the teams could control the coaching staff, the play style, and the development of that player. But they don't do it that way. Baseball does not do it that way. Baseball guys get drafted and go to college. It's baffling. I don't get it, but it's not going to change anytime soon.
Our next email comes from a longtime listener of the show, James R. Curry. And he says, an email for the show from me, James Curry, usually of Texas, but originally and presently near Stratford upon Avon in England.
That's right.
So is he living there temporarily or?
He's back visiting family.
I see. Okay. Well, thanks for taking the time on your vacation to send us an email. He says, hi, Doug and Eddie. Which city got wronged, Doug wondered, in regard to the Stars and the Wild. As I put the over-under on Minnesota fans who emailed you after that comment at 3.5, I figured I'll offer a little bit of the Stars fans' viewpoint. Well, so far, none. So they would be under at the moment. He says, obviously, the city which got wronged was Minnesota, which isn't a city, it's a state. But anyway, they lost their team, and nobody is saying, do you know who really got screwed on that deal? Dallas. But that was 31 years ago. And as a Stars fan who's been lectured to about my stolen team, Wild fans, not enough to remember, my sympathy has slowly evaporated. The Dallas Stars organization embraced the franchise's rich history and the legacy of the North Stars when they moved to Dallas. And as such, you'll see many North Star jerseys in the American Airlines Center. The North Stars retired numbers hang in the rafters. The North Stars logo is visible on those numbers. And on the team's banners that hang out alongside those celebrating the Dallas Stars accomplishments. North Stars alum have been present at Stars events, and DallasStars.com will post stories about former North Stars players. No, the Dallas Stars organization didn't sweep the franchise's past under the rug. It's been celebrated from the start. In fact, the team came close to wearing the original North Stars colors in the 2013 rebrand, as one of the designs under consideration was a variation of those old North Star sweaters, which makes the Wild's decision to wear a third jersey honoring the North Stars a strange one. I understand why the fans love it, and those third jerseys are beautiful, but there's a joke among Dallas fans that the Wild are giving a loving tribute to a team that bounced them from the playoffs last year. And so was at an impasse. Neither fan base is willing to give up their claim to the North Stars history, and simply transforming the pre-located franchise records to Minnesota would be an unlikely move. The Stars have always promoted franchise history in a way that few relocated teams ever have. Heck, I'd be upset if I wasn't even living in America in 1993. The Stars fans, those Minnesota days are part of our identity. As Stars fans, those Minnesota days are part of our identity. I don't offer you a solution, simply my perspective, subjective as it may be. I'll leave you with this. By 2026, the Wild will have been in Minnesota for as long as the North Stars were. And that is from Stars fan James R. Curry. Thank you, James.
Which means soon enough, the Stars will have been in Dallas longer than they were in Minnesota. So which team do they really belong to? I mean, look, we live here in LA, Eddie. Does anybody consider the Lakers or the Dodgers a relocated team, a stolen team?
No.
No, certainly. Because we grew up with them out here. So yeah. Enough time has passed that they are now LA's teams. And that'll be the case for Dallas soon enough.
It's funny you say that. I did notice at Kings games that they put on the scoreboard, or not the scoreboard, the video board, like, you know, during the pregame warm-up.
Yep.
They have like a Kings logo that they made, and part of the design, it says LA's firstborn team or something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because the Kings obviously weren't relocated like the Dodgers and the Lakers were. They were created here. So, anyway.
Yep. Yep. Also true of the Rams back in the day, now that they're back, but they moved, unfortunately for them.
They weren't relocated from somewhere?
No. Huh. I think the Rams were, I don't believe so. No, they were. I think Cleveland.
Yeah, I think so. I thought so. Yeah.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Our next email comes from our friend Matt. He's in Da Nang. And he says, "Dear Eddie and Doug, I'm coming to California soon, and I'm wondering what tier does one need to be on Patreon so that I can have Doug drive me around while I experiment with different psychotropic drugs? I do not apologize for the length of this email, but I do apologize for being unable to think of Eddie's nephew as anything other than Bastardo. P.S. Looking forward to hearing some Chris Kohler Star Wars reviews this summer. Sincerely, Matt in Da Nang." Matt, in order to get me to drive you around while you experiment with different psychotropic drugs, I would say you would need to have a time machine and be my college roommate back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I do have a price. I mean, Lord
knows. We all
do.
Yeah.
You give me, you know, a figure of money that has a comma in it, I'll drive your ass around. there's no doubt. So, yeah, there's a price to be paid. We'll talk off the air. But if you are going to be in California soon, it would be great to see you again. I met him when he was in Montreal. Oh. He's been in the Asian theater for a long time now. And it'd be great to catch up with you. He's got a family now.
Not literally in the Asian theater. He's not a traveling.
He's not a performer.
No.
He's been in Asia for many years now. As a family, it would be great to catch up with you if you are going to be back in California. So let me know if you're interested, or we'll have time.
Are we at the final? Are we at the final email?
Okay. I hold in my hands the final email for the great Karnak,
and it of course comes from you talk about, you know, the Stars, right, being in Dallas longer than they were in Minnesota or whatever. I think at some point Hart might maybe have more closes than our friend in Switzerland.
Mario in Salzburg has been a while.
So Hart,
but I still think he had a long streak there.
All right. Well, this is from Hart in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. I'm sure Hart would be a big fan of the Montreal Echo as well. Gentlemen, I hope you're well. Patrick Waugh is back, and before anyone starts whining about how he quit his coaching duties just before the regular season started last time around, or that he assaulted a door in his own home and the cops were called, or that he sent his kid all the way across the ice to pummel another young goalie, let me also bring up the reasons why Lou made a great hire. First of all, while this is not Lou's concern, this is great for the game. The Wayne Gretzky of goaltending is back in a prominent position, and you have to think the Islanders players and fans are pretty jacked up. Reason number two, who isn't going through a wall for a all-in passionate coach who also happens to have been an elite of the elite as a player? The only NHLer in history with three Conn Smythe trophies for playoff MVP, he might have been the most clutch pro player the pro player hockey has ever seen. Thirdly, St. Patrick's NHL coaching record was 246, 130, 92, and 24. And he's put in the time riding the buses again, going 524, 255, and 66 in the queue and winning the Memorial Cup with his Ramparts this past season. Finally, he's got a very talented goalie back there in Sorokin, and I can only imagine having a legend like Wah to lean back on will be at least useful and potentially inspirational for the young tender. I should confess to significant bias on this topic. In the 1980s, the Islanders became my favorite team, my first favorite team, back when Mike Bossy was their big goal scorer. But Bossy retired, and a young Patrick Wah rose to prominence with Montreal, and he quickly became my favorite player. His Habs were in town on my 16th birthday back in the early 90s. I managed to meet him, and he was beyond generous with his time, bringing me to the ice with him for a photo after practice, signing my Wah jersey, a Beckett Hockey Card magazine, cards, and several photos. None of us are perfect, but that man was beyond kind to an awestruck kid, and that's what it's all about, isn't it? My wife's team is still very much the Jets, but things are about to get pretty, pretty steamy with the girlfriend team. Let's go, Islanders! Have a great week, Hart, in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. How about that?
That's a cool story.
Yeah, for sure.
You grew up in Porterville. You did not go to as many, you didn't have access to a lot of pro sports. Do you have a experience with an athlete as a child that you remember?
No. No, I don't.
All right.
Do you?
Oh,
do
many.
Do you?
I certainly do. I remember going to camp with the Los Angeles Rams when they played in Anaheim, and they had their camp in Fullerton, I believe. And that was the year that my dad and I were talking to, I believe, Jack Youngblood. And we were walking with him as they were going from the locker room to the field, and we were just kind of talking to him. And then he got done and he's like, well, thanks for coming out, guys. You know, good to meet you. And we turned around and we realized we were at center field, the midfield with the rest of the team. And my mom had been stopped by security and all the other fans were well behind the gate, but they thought we were with the team. So they just let us keep walking with Jack Youngblood. So I remember that. And then afterwards, I'm going to look up the name of the guy because I can never remember him. Because of the legendary other player. There was a guy, offensive lineman for the Rams, in that same era. Anyway, they took a picture
Jackie
of it.
Slater.
No. It was an offensive guard, but they took a picture. His hand was bigger than my entire head. And the picture my dad took was of this guy's hand covering my entire head.
Yeah, that reminds me of the scene at the Buffalo playoff game where Jason Kelsey had his shirt off and got a lot of attention. He was holding a beer can, and it looked like he was holding a shot glass.
Right.
And it just reminds you how giant these guys are.
100%. It's crazy. So I can't even – Dennis Hera was the name of the player. Okay. That was it. Anyway, so I remember that. And then I remember my favorite baseball player growing up was Dick Schofield, shortstop for the California Angels.
You love Dick, yeah.
Easy. They had a thing where it was photo day, and they lined us all up around the perimeter of the field behind a rope, and players would go walk around slowly, and everybody could get their pictures or get their autograph. And I had my film camera at the time, and I'm waiting patiently. All the great Angel players of that day were going by, and I loved them all. But when he came by, I abandoned the rule of stay behind the rope. And I ran out to him, and we got a picture of him with his arm around me just before security ushered me back behind the rope. I was not to be restrained. And I gave my dad my camera. I said, I'm going out there for a picture. You better hurry, Duke. And I ran out there. And luckily, you know, little kid, he's not going to, you know, tackle me or
tase you.
Yeah, there's not going to be any of that stuff. So, and I don't think too many people were clamoring for Dick Schofield's picture or autograph back in the day. So, but he had the game-winning grand slam and the greatest comeback in Angels history against the Detroit Tigers in 1987. I think they were down 7 runs going into the bottom of the ninth. Scored 8. He had the game-winning grand slam down the left field line over the low wall. I remember that very well and loved it. So those kind of memories stick with you forever. And I hope athletes are reminded of that often, that the smallest interaction with the fan can leave an imprint forever. Yeah. Dwayne Buice, a relief pitcher for the Angels, I was sitting down the right field line right by the bullpen where they used to be. And he came by and there wasn't a big crowd that day. And he's like, hey, kid, you collect baseballs? I'm like, yeah, of course. He threw one over the fence to me. Loved it. And he went on to be one of the founders of Upper Deck. Hmm. So he made far more money in sports memorabilia than he ever did as a player. But again, I wouldn't remember Dwayne Buice other than that. So if you're a player, an athlete, even at the college level, you know, those kids idolize you. Yeah. And it's a big deal to see them. I would always bug my dad to go see Lakers games. And I didn't know it at the time, but one, it was a long drive, and two, it was not affordable. It was not viable for him. So, but I was always like, I want to go see the Pepe. So he's like, I tell you what, we'll go see, let's go see a college basketball game. So we went to go see Cal State Fullerton Titans games. And that was like seeing Kansas and Kentucky and Duke at the time to me. It's just, these are college athletes. I was a little kid. My God, the Cal State Fullerton Titans. Oh, they were nothing. These are nothing. You know, unless I saw Cedric Sabalos, who played for the Titans. I'm not, you know, but again, the interaction that those players have will stick with you, positive or negative, will stick with people forever, as Hart in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia reminds us.
All right, that'll do it for this week's show. Thank you very much to all who took the time to send us an email. If you want to do so for next week's show, the email address is feedback@puckpodcast.com. Again, if you'd like to support us on Patreon and possibly have Doug drive you around while you're doing drugs, it is patreon.com/puckpodcast. He does have his price. And he has
what would your price be, Eddie?
Depends on what the drug was, I think. You know, it might be pretty high, right? You know, because I might be, no pun intended, because you know, my life could be in danger while operating a moving vehicle. I don't know.
Yeah. If you're on bath salts, I'm out.
Yeah. We're on Facebook until, you know, we get scammed again, facebook.com/puckpodcast, on Twitter @puckpodcast, and again, patreon.com/puckpodcast. That'll do it for this week's show. For my co-host, Doug Stolhan, I'm Eddie Garcia. Thank you, as always, for listening. We'll talk to you next week with another edition of the Puck Podcast. Oh, my God. I forgot to play the horn for the entire show. The Boston Bruins. We're supposed to play the Boston Bruins horn. Oh, well.
Oh, my God.